What's up, guys? Cody and Steven with the Do Work Podcast.
Yo!
Hope y'all like the new kicking soundtrack we got going on at the beginning.
Yeah, that was like an old favorite of mine from back when I was in high school, and I contacted the band in like three different ways, and they did not answer. So I went straight to the record label and got hit up like in 4 days. They're like, yeah, dude, use a track. You know, so that's really cool of them.
Hell yeah, sounds, and it's kick-ass too. So hopefully you like it. It's 29 extra seconds of shenanigans, but it sounds kick-ass, so hope you enjoy it.
Yeah, so Cody, tell us what's been going on in the Do Work world. People haven't heard from us in over a month.
It's been a while, guys, and I know typically I like to blame Steven for editing an episode.
No.
And I'm like, oh my God, edit it faster. But he does such a good job when he edits. This is me. I've been studying for this captain test and just not necessarily made enough time where I should have. And then things have come up, and it's just been one thing after another. But here we go. We're finally getting one out.
Yep, and this is one that we recorded a little while ago. I mean, it's been on the back burner for quite some time. And Cody's, like, gonna be the next captain is what it sounds like. So he's studying his ass off, and that's been his day every single day. There's pictures on Facebook of him at the water park with his family, and he's out there in the sun getting his tan on, and he's got a textbook.
Yeah, I've been studying pretty good. I hope it counts for something. I mean, it has to. It has to.
I've never seen anybody study as much as this guy does. So
I just know I have to score high, so that's the goal, and I hope I'm gonna score the highest, because my God, mother of God, if I don't, the amount of studying and sacrificing and crap that I've done for this test, I'll be so pissed.
Yep.
The person who beats me, if it happens, Lord forbid, definitely deserved it.
Yeah, because that means they put in the work as well. And tonight, I understand, is your last night to imbibe in alcohol.
Tonight's the last night. I'm planning on drinking pretty heavy tonight. And it's the last night till the test. Not forever, just the test. So I can keep alive whatever little brain cells I have.
Mm-hmm. You need all of them.
I need all of them, especially that one. That one little guy that'll get fried off tonight.
Yeah, all four of them. I can't go down to three.
I can't lose. I can't lose the four I got.
Yeah, cool. So that's kind of what's been happening with us. And I'm kind of busy trying to... I learned how to study from Cody. He kind of got me into it. So I'm studying for my driver operator.
We got a cat fight.
Oh, yeah. I got my two cats there. You know, swatting each other and stuff. It's pretty awesome. I have one cat. He starts all the fights. He's super nice and, like, cute. And he does, like, these little half-ass bites. The other cat has no time for it. And it will fuck the other cat up.
The other cat has no fucks given.
Yeah, he will bite the shit out of the other one. And I don't know why. Like the other one keeps, like, antagonizing him. But I guess it's fun.
Yeah, he likes it.
Some people like getting pushed around.
So what's been going on in Steven's world?
Well, I bought a sweet-ass vape. Vape Nace, y'all.
Yeah, he's got this multicolored vape. It kind of looks like a dick, but, you know.
Yeah, it's supposed to help me from, it's supposed to keep me from dipping.
Which I think you're dipping and vaping at the same time right now.
Yeah, it is. I threw my first party. Okay, so everybody has given me shit for a while. I bought a house a few years ago here in Pampa, and it's a really cute old house, and I love it, and it's got a sweet-ass sound system, and I've been getting a lot of flack from folks for not inviting them over to come hang out, and I just don't like the idea of me hosting anything and people relying on me for their enjoyment, so I didn't do any of that, and then this summer, I decided, fuck it, I'm going to bust out this grill that I won in a raffle, and I'm going to host a cookout. We're going to have burgers, brats, and dogs. And then I visited every liquor store in town, like, at least twice each, and bought a bunch of cheap-ass liquors and mixers. Spent, like, a good amount of money to make sure there was variety of alcohol. Bought a 30-pack and invited as many people as I could, and I did it on a B-shift day when Cody couldn't show up.
Yep, so I was at the station, most likely studying.
We had washers, we had beanbags. I refused to call it cornhole because everybody kind of snickers a little on the inside when you hear cornhole.
Oh, yeah.
And washers. And I remember the cap, not washers, horseshoes. I went and borrowed the horseshoes and the little stakes. And he was like, you know, your backyard isn't big enough for a horseshoe field or pitch or whatever you want to call it. And I was like, bro, we're going to be drinking, and, like, are we really that good at horseshoe players anyways to where it matters?
We're going
to
be fucked up. It doesn't matter at this point.
Yeah. So we did that. We played a game called Beer Cricket, all this other stuff, and people had fun. I, like, developed this menu and put all these drinks together, and I found out that if there's not somebody to mix the drinks for them, they won't drink it. For the most part, people will just take the easiest route, even though you can make some really tasty drinks and as strong as you want at an open bar. So I don't know why that didn't go down as well as it did, but I got fucked up.
Yeah, see, with me, I'd just be like, okay, there's whiskey, and then there's Coke.
Uh-huh.
Done.
Exactly. The last drink on my menu was like the half and half. You get a half of liquor of your choice and half of mixer of your choice. And that's your drink.
Oh, yeah.
It's easy. That'd be awesome. No, it was good. I think we're going to do another one this time on a C-shift day so the B-shifters can show up.
That's right.
Because some of the people that give me crap for not hosting are on B-shift. So, got to show them I'm not just being a dick. And it was fun.
Oh, yeah. Anytime you can get a bunch of firemen and their family together and get fucked up, it's a great time.
Oh, yeah. For sure. And we had some dispatchers and police officers, and it was cool. Little responder family get together.
And you should be getting pretty fucked up with a bunch of firemen this coming week, right?
Yeah, yeah. If I can find somebody to cover my shift tomorrow. So the Texas State Association of Firefighters biennial conference is this week.
In McAllen, Texas.
And I don't know if anybody's ever been to like a union conference, but people are always like running for elections, or they're looking to garner support for certain motions they'll be making that'll add, you know, to our dues. And in order to do that, they ply you with all sorts of free booze and food.
Yeah, what can you give firemen to get their vote? Booze!
Yeah, so you go from like hotel room to hotel room to hotel room, and each one of them has an open bar. Most of them have liquor. Sometimes you'll walk in and they'll have tamales, like six different kinds, and you're just like...
Mariachi band, like it was crazy.
There was a mariachi band and like this gorgeous singer who was, it was great. And then we went to one room and they had like, I don't know. I guess there's like a website you can just order a bunch of really hot girls in skimpy clothing to serve alcohol. One of the rooms had that.
I need that for my house.
Yeah, I don't know if you could afford the rates.
I don't
think
I could. Or the divorce. How you motherfucker.
But if you did it, you'd have something attractive and skimpy dressed like bringing you drinks every day.
Yeah.
To drown your misery of losing your wife and kids.
That'd be worth it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Instant gratification.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's what's been new in my life is that. Let's talk a little bit about some of the training that we've done. This year kind of went by really quick because we just traveled, and now we're kind of done with the traveling until next year, FDIC, hopefully.
Yep, hopefully we can hit up FDIC if somebody, you know, doesn't go somewhere that he hasn't mentioned about.
No, I didn't want to say anything. So there's a urban department that's hiring, and I applied for it, and I really hope I get it. I don't know if I want to like name drop it in case any of them listen. I don't want them to know. If you're curious, just go ahead and PM me. And it's super competitive, and there was people from all over the country at the test.
So if Steven gets hired there, then we'll see about FDIC. But if he doesn't, then most likely we'll be at FDIC. We got to go. You have to go once.
And even if, I mean, I'll be closer probably if I were to get hired. And then maybe that could be where we like meet up.
Like, hey, FDIC, let's do it.
Uh-huh. Cody Steven reunion. But for now, I'm still here in Pampa, Texas. And I really enjoy Pampa, Texas. And there's only two departments in the country that I would consider applying for. And only one of them had their application up. And honestly, the one who did, that's like the dream department. That's like the number one. That's like
the dream.
I heard this crazy story, and I won't say names again because I wasn't given permission to tell this story. But somebody's kid went and applied for FDNY. He made a 97. And I think, I don't think this is a typo in the message. I was told he placed 11,000 on the list.
Jesus.
11,000. How many fuckers apply for FDNY every year?
That's insane.
How many people do they hire? I mean, I believe it. If there's one city that can get, you know, five digits worth of...
I bet they hire 1,000, though.
You think?
Maybe. Yeah. Maybe. I don't know.
You make a 97 on the written test, and then you place 11,000, like...
Yeah, we'll see you never. Yeah. Like, holy shit.
Yeah, I don't... I mean, you made the list. Good job, but...
I mean, shit, what else do you want? A 97.
Yeah, I would print out that list, that little portion of the list, and I would frame it. Hell, I might print off the whole list and have this big, long-ass frame that starts on my ceiling and then bends down to, like, the wall and then kind of goes on the floor, and I'd cordon off the area and be like, there's my name.
Right there. Look at it highlighted.
Uh-huh. I went for my dreams. 11,000. Yeah. So, but it's not FDNY. And I went and did a ride along. The people were really awesome. It was cool getting to see them work. We caught a few structure fires, and yeah, it was great. I mean, everybody will be, you know, updated if anything is to happen, but I think it's a very slim chance.
It's possible, though. It is possible.
It is possible. And at the end of the day, even if I don't get it, I can say I went and, applied for the dream department, right? So I don't know if any of our listeners have gone through something like that where there's like one department that you've just, I mean, since you wanted to be a firefighter, you're like, yes, that's kind of where I want to go. But that would require moving across state lines, you know, maybe 1,000 miles away and no family, no friends. Like, do you do it or do you stay where you are and make your department the best department in the world? Does anybody have any experiences with following that crazy dream? If so, let us know. We'd love to talk to you about it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, hit us up. Let us know if you can relate to that story. Moving on, we interviewed one of Cody's idols and he was super stoked with this one, as was I. And somebody we both look up to, somebody who's been podcasting longer than we have and been putting his ideas out for other people to read much longer than we have, I think even before I was a firefighter. And it's kind of scary getting your voice out there on the podcast world or, you know, for the folks writing articles and magazines and personal blogs. You're putting yourself out there to get shit on. So,
and as soon as you do, there's so many people that are awesome. That, you know, oh yeah, man, we totally agree. Even if you don't agree, you throw out some different opinions, but then there's the guys that are just shitbirds, which they just like to, I don't know, what do you call that, trolling?
Yeah, you'd call that trolling. And even trolling can be fun and if it's done in jest, but yeah, I don't know. There's like lots, the majority of folks, once you put yourself out there, love to engage in good dialogue, and that's great. But occasionally you get some, you know, hate mail and all that stuff. The interview with Robbie, we talk about podcasting in the fire service, and of course we get his history and all that stuff, and it was a really good interview. He did it in the car while his son was at some sporting practice.
Yep, and it worked out pretty well, and Robbie's kind of, he was the main factor in me deciding to do the podcast, is I was listening to him, and I can relate to a lot of the things that he was saying, and I just felt like, hey man, he was speaking how he got started in one of his episodes, and I was like, you know what, we could do this.
And we go into some details with some of our favorite episodes that he's done, so stay tuned, you know, grab you a drink, maybe a cigar if that's your thing, sit back, relax if you're commuting. Sorry again that it took so long, but here it is, hope you enjoy. Hit us up with any feedback you have, email us. To all the guests that we have lined up that hasn't been working out this like last month or two because of the studying and so on, we apologize. We do this as a hobby. We're both full-time firefighters on opposite shifts. It's really hard to get our schedules to line up. Cody's got a family. I've got a family of 2 cats that keep me fucking busy.
Oh, yeah.
So, and I got to go home occasionally and go see my parents, which it's been 9 months since I've seen my parents, and I went and saw them the other day. It was great.
Life happens, guys, and we try our best to get the schedules to line up, and when they do, and we can produce some badass content, but when they don't, we just have to reschedule, so forgive us for that.
And we keep doing this for you guys because y'all keep reaching out and telling us y'all love the content, y'all love the podcast, you know, when's the next one coming out, all that stuff, and we love it. It warms our hearts for sure. Let's get on with the interview.
Anyway, check this interview out, guys. Tell us what you think. Hey guys, what's going on? It's Cody with the Do Work Podcast.
And Steven.
What's up, guys? Another great guest with us today.
One we've been waiting to interview pretty much since we started.
Yeah, pretty much the whole reason why I got into the whole podcast game is I heard a couple episodes from Robbie, and it kind of kicked this whole thing off for me. What's going on, Robbie?
Hey, man, how are you guys doing? Great to be on. Thank you guys for, the humbling words. I'm just a dude, so I appreciate you guys giving me the praise, but I appreciate everything you guys are doing, and it's humbling and an honor to be on, so thank you.
Awesome, yeah. So just a dude, that's seen in your blog title that you've been running for years that I knew about before the podcast. I actually just recently got into listening podcasts, So it's still a new thing for me. But that's the Average Jake Firefighter blog and the podcast by the same name. So tell us a bit about yourself, Robbie.
You know, not to get too belabored into the point, I guess, but you know, because I guess some people these days think biographies are gay. And not to, you know what I mean? Like, they don't want to.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like, oh, you're bragging about yourself. And it's like, nah, it's just, you know, I feel like that gives context, right? Like, if I tell you where I'm from and my experiences or where I've been, you know, you kind of get a better grasp of where I'm coming from. And I think that's something that's lacking in the conversation today. But for those that don't know, I'm Robbie Owens. I run the Average Jake Firefighter blog, and I do the Average Jake Firefighter podcast. I've been involved in the fire department since I was 15 years old. I come from a fire service family. My dad's a firefighter. My brother's a firefighter, and my sister didn't want to be a firefighter, so she married one.
Well,
so
works.
It works out great. The hardest part is getting together for Christmas on four different shift schedules.
That's true, man.
But so I started out, again, like I said, as a volunteer at the age of 15 with the Mechanicsville Volunteer Fire Department, a part of Hanover Fire and EMS. Don't get crazy about that. It was Hanover Fire and EMS. Everybody knows that it's like the land of slicers. So don't hate it too much. I was there before it was Hanover Fire and EMS. It was just Hanover Fire. But I volunteered there for about 10 years and started as a junior member all the way through cadet firefighter, held officer positions. The last officer position I had before I left was assistant chief of the whole fire department. Got hired when I was 20 years old with Stafford County Fire Rescue in Northern Virginia and left there to come to my dream department, which was Henrico Fire. Henrico Fire was my destination fire department. Always wanted to work there ever since I got in the fire department. It's actually before I ever got in the fire department. You know, it's kind of funny. My dad's been a firefighter as long as I can remember, but my idol growing up was a guy who lived down the street. There's a guy named Chris Buren, and he was a Henrico firefighter. His dad was a Henrico firefighter, and we had a fire in our neighborhood, and I saw him like he was a volunteer at the same fire department that I volunteered at as well. And I just saw him. He's huge, too. He's like 6'7", and his hands look like a first baseman's mitt. I saw him get out of his truck. He pulled up in his POV. He kicked in a front door with a radio in his hand, and he was wearing like one of these Letterman's jackets that said Henrico Fire, you know, Henrico Professional Firefighters had the union logo on the back. And ever since that moment, I was like, I want to do what I called him Mr. Chris. I want to do what Mr. Chris does. And my dad's like, well, you know, I do that, too. And I'm like, well, yeah, but you're not like Mr. Chris. You know, you're not big and tough like Mr. Chris is. And so he's like, well, Mr. Chris works for Henrico. And that was always, like, ever since then, it was all the guys that took me under their wing, all the guys that when I came up were the guys that I respected the most worked for Henrico Fire. And so I knew that my destination was Henrico Fire. Like, you know, I got hired in Stafford, but even when I was getting hired in Stafford, I was still taking the test for Henrico Fire. Like, I would have left there in 2 seconds to go to Henrico Fire. So luckily, that's where I'm at now. I'm a captain. I'm a station captain, currently the station captain of Station 14, located in the East End. I've been with Henrico I will be with Henrico for 15 years in May. So, you know, pretty vast experience level with that. And like I said, Henrico's got everything you would ever want in the fire department. We've got a very rural East End that has tankers and rural water supply and farms. We have a very, like, our northern area borders the city of Richmond, so it is very urban. And our West End is the absolute picture of suburbia if you looked it up in the dictionary. So there's every kind of firefighting that you could want to get into located in our little bow tie here in Virginia, just outside the city of Richmond.
That's kick-ass, man. You got on with the department of your dreams. You made it, even if you bounced around just a little bit, but you made it there. And you've been there 15 years, so...
This sounds like a goal that you've had since you were real young, something you've been working for a long time. Whereas, you know, with me and Cody, it was like, you know, we didn't decide to be firefighters till later on in life. So that's really cool. We always like talking to people who've had the dream longer than we were alive.
Yeah, it just was always, you know, like I tell people all the time, there was two parts to my life. Was when I was growing up, I was an athlete, mostly a wrestler. Like, I wanted to wrestle in college. That was my goal. And until I got involved in the fire service, like I got involved in that fire service, man. And I went on that first call, you know, especially like, cause we in Virginia at the time, you could take firefighter one when you turned 16. So I got in that firefighter one class the day I turned 16. In fact, I think it started, I turned, you know, on January the 18th, turned 16. And I think the class started January the 20th. 2 days later, I'm in firefighter one class. And 3 months after that, I'm going to my very first fire. And after that, I was hooked. I stopped wrestling. I stopped playing football. I stopped doing, you know, I was getting good grades so that I could go to the firehouse. Like, that was the deal. Like, if you got C's, you could come to the firehouse. So I was A's and B's and C's so that I could stay running those fire calls, and I've just been hooked ever since.
I was going to ask you if running fires so young affected your sports, but you kind of answered that for me.
The coaches were not crazy about it. I mean, some of them told me, like, there was no future in it. Like, it was, you're not going to be, you know how many guys have been trying to get on the fire department and forever and never get on? And it just was, I wasn't trying to hear that. They didn't seem very supportive, so I was like, I'm going to go do the fire department thing. And it obviously worked out. I wasn't going to go to the Olympics, I can assure you. So I obviously made the right choice.
Yeah, you always get the young firefighters who played college ball, and they're like, oh, man, so what sidetracked you? Oh, shoulder injury or something. Like, yeah, that's why you're not in the big leagues right now.
That's right.
No, but that's cool. I always see you tweeting on Twitter about Henrico County. Seems like all sorts of crazy stuff goes down there pretty regularly. So I'm guessing it's a large department with a large district.
Yeah, we have 20 engine companies, 6 ladder companies, 3 rescue companies, 15 what we call fire medic units, or maybe it's 16 now. Like, we're adding units left and right. We're the second largest as far as personnel goes in the whole state of Virginia, Fairfax County being the largest as far as personnel. But, you know, we're a pretty busy, large department. You know, and again, like I said, we border. So if, like, you look at the city of Richmond, Henrico County kind of looks like a bow tie that encircles it. It's really wide on the ends and narrow in the middle. And we get that urban area. There's just things going on all the time. It's a pretty hotbed area, especially. So this weekend too is the NASCAR race. And a lot of people don't know this. Richmond International Raceway, or now Richmond Raceway, is actually in Henrico. It's not in the city of Richmond. So we staff the track. We work the pits as well as the outside track area, fire and safety and EMS. We staff that entire area. So essentially you drop another 60 to 70,000 people in our county 2 times a year for these races. I mean, there it is. We've had everything from trauma alerts, campers catch on fire, you know, I mean, anything that you can think of, we've had happen out there at that racetrack, because it becomes like a little another small city within the county. So it's a neat area to work. I really enjoy working there. And like I said, having grown up here my entire life, it's all areas I'm familiar with.
There's no way you've run any alcohol-related incidents out there, have you?
Yeah, that's pretty predominant.
Hold my beer and watch this shit.
Right.
Those are fun calls.
Yeah, I'm a pretty big race fan, so I've maybe, you know, seen, witnessed, or been involved in some of those alcohol-related incidents.
There you go, man.
We have a captain who goes to the Texas Motor Speedway a few times a year. I don't know how often the races come by, but when they do, he's there and he's working in the pit. And I asked him, how did you get involved with that? He's like, well, back when they first started over there, they had this, you know, call out for paramedics. So he shows up, and during the briefing, I guess, he raises his hand, you know, that, yes, I'm a paramedic. Like, okay, good. We also need people who have extrication experience. And he raises his hand again, and they're like, okay, looks like you're hired. So he's been like doing that for years. Yeah.
That's a pretty kick-ass gig, though.
And
getting out there,
now they have the super truck racing, and they hit those jumps, and he actually worked 3 different wrecks this last weekend when he was up there.
Yeah, I mean, it is an interesting, like, so that's a whole different world of, like, safety and firefighting, right? Like, I've had the opportunity to work the pits and things like that. It's a whole different world. If you like racing, though, it kind of sucks, because you can't see anything. Like, you're standing in about, like, a 3-foot by 3-foot red square, fully turned out, with a fire extinguisher, and you're basically just like watching the pit box in front of you. So, like, you can't see the wreck on the backstretch. So if you like racing, it kind of sucks, but it definitely is interesting. I mean, just it is a whole nother mindset of, like, when that guy comes in the pits, if the car catches on fire, you got to be able to hop the wall, but watch your back to make sure the guy's not, you know what I mean? It's just a next level situational awareness.
With the racing fuel that the cars use, it's when it burns, you can't really see it in the daylight. Am I right in that?
Yeah. So it's a lot of it's ethanol. And so you can see it a little bit, you know what I mean? But it does burn a little cleaner. The Indy cars, it burns like completely clean. So you can't see that at all. We used to have Indy car races at Richmond as well. And that's, actually, I could care less for Indy car. So that's typically the races I worked the most. And that stuff does burn completely clean. Like, you cannot see it. So it's, that's kind of scary. Like, no lie, you'll see some guy, and he'll start like patting his fire suit down. You're like, oh crap, he's burning, but you can't see that he's burning. He just feels the heat.
Yeah, that would suck ass. No, thank you.
Yeah, it's pretty nuts out there.
You're a captain, almost got 15 years in May over at Station 14. Is that over in the rural East End? Is that part of the urban area? Is that in the suburban area? Paint me a picture.
The station I'm at now, and I've been all over the place in my 15 years, we tend to move people around a lot for whatever reasons, especially being a medic. That is kind of what drives a lot of our station transfers. And even as a captain, I still have to maintain that ALS certification and ride up on the EMS supervisor car, ride up on the battalion car. And I even ride the ambulance every once in a while just because it's the right thing to do, I think. You know, don't tell your people to do something you're not willing to do yourself. But yeah, the station I'm currently at is a more rural station. We have a tanker, we have a brush truck, an engine, and an ambulance. The ambulances are actually what we call fire medic units. They are staffed with one BLS provider, one ALS provider that are firefighters as well. They have, you put your turnout gear on them. They have two air packs. They have a water can, a fire extinguisher, and a set of irons. So their mission when we get on a call is to go to work. That's the deal. Like, you get there, you're a firefighter first. Then you know, if there becomes a patient, whether firefighter or civilian, you stop your firefighting activities and go take care of that patient. But yeah, so the area I'm in now, pretty rural. We do have a heavy industrial area just down the street from us. As a matter of fact, Facebook is building a server farm, for lack of a better term, about 2 miles from my fire station. And it is an enormous building. It's an H-style building, and it's about the two legs of the H are each about 4 football fields long. It's enormous.
Wow.
Just the infrastructure they built to build the building is insane. So that's pretty neat. But like I said, the other areas that I've been in, the northern area, I spent some time out west, have gotten some of that urban experience. We don't tend to have a lot of high-rises in Henrico Fire, but we do get that townhouse fire, those multifamily dwellings, little bungalows, you know, 500 or 600 square foot bungalows. We get a lot of that urban feel, you know, in Henrico as well. And again, of course, out in the West End, it is complete suburbia. You have huge McMansion houses. I mean, just ridiculous size houses with long setback driveways and a whole sort of different challenges everywhere you go. It's like I said, it's a really, really neat place to work. You can be on a 100-acre brush fire 1 minute and on a working townhouse fire the next minute. So one of the last days I was working and was riding the battalion car, there was an overdose right around the corner from the fire station. Cleared up from that, got dispatched to an extrication, cleared up from that and got dispatched to a townhouse fire. And that was all within a span of about 3 to 4 hours. It's a pretty interesting place to work.
That's one of those days. We have those ourselves where you have anything here. You can have from extrication to structure fire and then a large freaking 100 million acre grass fire that we have. And it's insane some of the stuff that we run on ours also. So it kind of sounds like we're in similar situations here. We don't have a lot of high rises. I think we've got
three
buildings,
like,
that are over 4 stories.
Yeah, and then over 20 that are over 3 stories. So we are required to have a ladder truck with a 100-foot stick or a 75-foot stick. But since I've been here, there haven't been any high-rise incidents.
No.
And most people I talk to can't remember any. So.
And most it's just saving people from elevators.
Yeah, we do that a lot.
That's one of the things about the fire service, right, is that I think that's one of the problems, and I don't mean to step up on a soapbox or anything, but when we talk about...
We like soapboxes. Bring them out. Bring them out.
Awesome. Well, we'll stack them up. You know, when we talk about this whole experience thing versus... I think experience is valuable, and I've gone on record and say that a million times, but you're only as smart as where you're standing on the face of the earth at the time that you're talking. A guy that from FDNY or DC or something like that, he's got a ton of experience, but what he always does maybe doesn't translate to what I do, right? When they're riding 4- and 5-man engines, I'm riding a 3-person engine, whereas the fire officer, I've got to be the backup guy, right? I've got to be that working supervisor. Well, that's completely different than the guy in FDNY and the guy in DC. Initially, too, where I'm at now, this is not best practice, but it's just how we do business. If we have a fire in our first due, our third guy drops off and he brings the tanker. So we roll a 2-person engine with the guy, third guy bringing a tanker behind us. And our initial thoughts on this, or initial plan, is to roll up with the engine and the tanker right behind it, get them as close to the house as we can, and that's our hydrant. So we would have that engine driver pump both of those, and then the tanker driver and the officer go fight fire. and again, not knocking, you know, not best practices or whatever, but I guarantee the guy in FDNY doesn't operate like that, right? So does his experience automatic, you know, does it, what he's saying match up with what I do on a daily basis? So who really has the more experience where I work, right? Or in the environment that I work, or, you know, I probably have more to offer, or you guys have more to offer the small suburban fire department or the small rural fire department than those guys do. But yet they're the ones that people are always like, you know, oh, what they say is gospel. You know, man, they have five man ladder trucks. We can't dedicate a guy straight to the roof, right? Like, we have three people on my ladder truck that rides around, three people on the rescue company too. So that truck driver has to do all that outside truck work until the next truck driver gets there. And again, I'm not knocking any of these other fire departments. I just think that we in the fire service need to kind of step back and evaluate what we're really trying to do when we bring these guys in to talk, or when we read an article by Ray McCormack. Is it valuable stuff? Sure it is. But does it really, really apply to us? Does it really, really apply to what we do? And to be quite honest, like, I took an engine company class in the city of Charlotte. Great fire department. They use 2.5-inch hose, and they use three people on that hose line for standpipe operation. Well, that's all well and good, but I don't have three people. And in initial phases, I may not have three people until the second or even third engine gets there. So when we asked them to do the drill with two people, they looked at us like we were crazy. And we explained to them, look, man, we're going to have two people. We're not going to have a magical third person. So if we can't do this technique with only two people, it's a great technique, but it's not going to work for us. You know, and they kind of understood that. And so I think that's, and again, all these urban guys and you know, all these guys, they're saying great stuff, but we got to take a step back and make sure that it fits the puzzle pieces of where we work. And sorry, that was kind of a long tirade, but.
Anytime I hear somebody or hear about somebody and what they're saying or their training is taking off like wildfire, and people are saying everything this guy says is gold or it's gospel, I'm always naturally skeptical. So I think, like you said, it's all about context. So you got to look at their background, where they're coming from, what type of department they work at. That's why when we have guests on the show, I always like to make the guests tell us where they work and what kind of describe the department to me. I want to get a picture of, you know, your type of experience and kind of compare that to mine in the back of my mind.
Yeah, like, what are you working with? How many people do you have showing up? Because in our department,
We're constantly comparing. Yeah, measuring dicks,
ladder,
like,
we don't have a
counting
ladder
trucks.
Company. Our chiefs are bringing the ladder truck. So that's our ladder company in our department. We got. So
it might be gospel in that department, and it might be great information for lots of departments all across the country. It's really you as the person intaking the information just has to be discerning, maybe proactive as far as, you know, what can I apply. So when I read an article with a new technique, or even an old technique that maybe I'm not familiar with, I say, well, can we do this? And we look at our response model and personnel and, you know, the districts, the types of fires we go into. Yeah. So you just, I don't know. It's hard. It's hard not to get swayed into the whole, you know, this person is awesome. They're great. Everything they say, 100% all the time. I'm going to say for most of my fire service idols, I'll probably agree with what they say maybe 80% of the time. Just because what we run and what they run is sometimes two different worlds.
100%. 100% two different worlds. And like Kurt Isaacson, for example, when I went down and took the company officer summit or whatever he was putting on in January with John Norman, that was great stuff, right? But even some of the things that Kurt does from a command perspective, some people were like, some of the conversations in the side where people were having, like, man, he's kind of goofy and he's doing this and he's going around venting windows. But what they don't understand, in Escambia County, Florida, that's what he's got to do. They might not have another ladder truck coming or got to do outside vent. He's got to go do it. And people were kind of like, well, he's not keeping track of people. Well, look, man, you know, I don't have to do command that way because I've got three chief officers coming to any significant incident. So I get to sit in the car, run the command board, do the SCBA air tracking. But, you know, you've got to think outside the box a little bit. One of the departments I worked for part-time is a little place called New Kent, just outside of Henrico, a little bit further east. That was a two-person, that's a six-person fire department every day. They had two at each station, three stations, and you were responsible for the engine, the ambulance, and whatever other apparatus, like whatever they called for, you just took it. And my time in Stafford County was very similar to that. So I can't be hey, you're the layout guy today. There ain't no layout guy. I don't have that guy. So we have to absorb those duties with other people. And I think that's where we've taken, I think, a wrong turn, I guess, sometimes in the fire department when we seek out some of this educational stuff. All the stuff that these guys are saying is good stuff, but it doesn't always fit the puzzle that I'm trying to solve. And to top that off, and it's kind of appropriate because it's FDIC week. FDIC is awesome, man. I've gone about 14 times, started going back in 2001. It's awesome, awesome experience. But again, all the people that are teaching there, maybe they don't exactly meet up with 100% with the puzzle that I'm facing in my fire department. And I would be willing to bet that if we really put our egos aside and look internally, we have people with as much or more talent than instructors at FDIC or people that are going around and teaching on the national circuit. I know in Henrico Fire, we have people of that caliber, but it's kind of like, you know, even Jesus said you can't be a prophet in your own land, right?
Mm-hmm,
so
exactly.
It's real tough to put those egos aside so that we benefit from that talent that is internal to us. And I see that almost every day.
Yeah, I think next year we have to go to FDIC.
Yeah,
I think it's mandatory.
I mean, at some point we have to go.
Me and Cody are new to the whole conference and training thing and traveling outside of your department to listen to instructors from different departments, and we've just started this year, so a little bit last year.
I've been doing it for a while.
Okay, Cody's been doing it for a while.
This is Steven's. Is this your second one?
Yeah, this will be my second.
Well, we're going to see old Kyle and Chief Reinwalt down in Conroe.
Yeah,
here for some training in a bit. And shout out to those guys for doing great work.
I actually got to meet Kyle Romagus in Florida, and that's a cool dude, man. And he's got such a great mission with the whole engine company resurrection, and you know, he's sending people to conferences. He's running these raffles and deals and sending people to conferences. And he actually sent a guy to the Fireground Commander Conference, which is in Virginia, which is one of the ones I'm involved with. And man, that's such a just a cool thing to like put that together to allow people to go just gain so much knowledge that's out there. It's really like he's just a super cool guy, and I really enjoyed sitting down and talking with him.
Yeah, I think it's awesome. He was telling us that he was going to all these conferences all across the country, but he was seeing the same people over and over again and kind of thought to, you know, well, why is this happening? Turns out a bunch of guys want to go. They just maybe can't afford to or don't know how to scrounge up the money for flights and hotel and, you know, how much to budget for food.
That shit's expensive, man. These conferences, the conference itself,
probably
isn't
not
that
expensive.
Bad.
No, the conference is affordable.
But it's the freaking hotels and the food
yeah.
and the
so
travel.
It's pretty cool that Kyle's doing that. And yeah, but you yourself, Robbie, are, I would say, a fire service influencer. You've been running this blog, and I remember one thing that's always stuck with me and that I really like is the 3-hour rule. Read that article, heard you speak about it on the podcast. I think it's incredibly important, and it's something that I always try to bring up to any rookie that I have. It's really easy to explain, too. They get it. There's a number, and then you break it down, and there's only three things to remember, and you're good.
Three things throughout your whole 24-hour day to do, and as long as you get them in, we feel good about ourselves. I love it, man.
Yeah, and when you think about it, in the grand scheme of things, right, like, that's not a lot of time. Right. I mean, like, think about it. Like, most of us work for 24 hours, and that is such a small portion of your day. You're going to spend more time sleeping, hopefully, right? Like, we only want to get up after midnight if it's burning, at least me.
No, that's me. But, for sure.
Yeah. You know, that you're going to spend most of your day doing, you know, sleeping more than anything, hopefully. So, I mean, that's really such a small amount of time to invest in yourself and in your team and in your craft. But that small amount of hours, that 3 hours, you can see such tremendous gains in your skill set by doing that and your knowledge base. At least for me, I know that when I spend an hour doing something, I'm better at it. And again, I'm not anybody special, right? Like there's no magic bullet. Like I'm not like an infomercial up here and like, you know, see it, be it, do it type kind of crap. You know what I mean? Like it's sweat equity is everything that I've ever been able to accomplish has always been through just good old fashioned, like hard work, put your nose down and grind it out. I'm not a savant in any of this. You know, some things have come naturally like everything else, but like, I'm not a numbers guy. Numbers don't stick in my head. So I have to study those like pump calculations, flow rates, drug dosages. I have to study those things because they don't imprint in my brain. I'm not a great ropes guy. So when I was a lieutenant on a rescue company, guess what we were doing almost every shift day? We were pulling out haul systems and we were tying knots because I need that sets and reps. You know, some people that stuff comes really natural to. That's not me. So it was really something that I started doing for myself that just made a lot of sense. And so I started preaching it to everybody. And I think it's helped a lot of people, and it just makes sense. It's not that hard.
I am really curious. I want to know what motivated you to start the Average Jake Firefighter blog. And then, of course, moving into the podcast world, that was a real prescient move. I mean, because podcasting has blown up over the last few years.
So it really is as simple as I had something to say and I didn't feel like I had a method to say it. There was a time, and I'm not speaking bad about my fire department, right? I love my fire department. We don't always see eye to eye on everything, but I love where I work. It was my dream department. It was my destination, but I was probably 6-7 years on, and I felt like I had all of this stuff that I wanted to say, but I didn't have an avenue to say it, like, especially internally, right? Like, I was just running up against walls. Like, I wanted to do, you know, I wanted to train people and I wanted to help the next generation of firefighters, but I couldn't get assigned to training. Like, I tried to get assigned to training and nope, sorry, we're going to pick this other guy. Okay. Hey, can I help out with teaching the recruit school? I'll come up here on my days off. You don't even have to pay me. No, we can't do that. That's illegal. Okay. How about this? How about, can I lead this training in the battalion? We're going to have this other guy do that. Okay. I mean, I'm going to all these things. I'm going to FDIC. I felt like I had so much to say and I didn't have an avenue to say it. So I was like, I got to get this stuff out, or I'm going to have word vomit over somebody's face and it's not going to be pretty when I do it. So I started writing. Like, it was therapeutic. Everything. It says, if you go back and read some of the very first stuff that I ever wrote, it's all like, hey, we went to this fire and this is what happened. And this is why that we did this. And this is what I didn't do well. And, you know, it's a lot of that kind of stuff. And then it kind of more evolved into just a chronicling of like things that I think, and experiences that I had, and just so on and so forth. But as I continued to do it, and I still post stuff occasionally, but as I continued to do it, I always felt like I was a better speaker than a writer. My writing style is very, I guess, rudimentary, I would say. I don't write very, like, I'm an emotional writer. I don't write, like, research papers well. Like, you can't say, Robbie, I need you to write a paper on, you know, the transmission for an E1 apparatus. Like, I wouldn't be very good at that. But if a idea strikes me, or like I get like this boom idea, man, I can write about it for hours and hours and hours. I tend to feel that way more. I tend to feel like I talk better than I write. So, and those ideas flow more freely in the spoken word for me than they do on the written word. So transitioning to the podcast seemed kind of like a no-brainer. And a lot of guys that I knew were doing it and doing it very well. And I didn't want to copy them, but I felt like, again, that I could bring a different perspective than what was already out there. Because this is getting to be, as you said, a pretty crowded space, right? But I don't think there's too many, because I'm not, while we both, you know, have fire service podcasts, we're not doing them the same way. And that's great. We shouldn't be doing them the same way, because Steven and Cody have a completely different perspective on the fire service than Robbie does. And your perspective is just as valuable as mine is. In fact, your perspective may reach somebody that mine can't, because of that whole thing we talked about before of my background and where I come from, you know, and not being similar to you guys. So essentially that's kind of how it all got started. And I didn't think anybody was going to listen to it, man. Like, I figured if I got a couple hundred, that would be, you know, great. And every episode I've put out has been well over 1,000 listens, almost to like 2,000 and 3,000 at some episodes. Like, my masking up episode was pretty popular. So I think that was like 3,000 listens at this point. People are still listening to it. And man, that's all humbling stuff, man. I get messages all the time about people who are like, I listen to your podcast. And man, that is just, that's like super humbling to me. I never thought that anything like that would happen. So it's really like, it's taken off more than I ever even expected it to. And that's just a super humbling thing for me. Just being, again, I'm just a dude, right? So I'm a guy who loves being in the fire service, and I'm a guy who loves talking and helping other firefighters. And so for people to reach out and to tell me that it's it's helped them or done some good stuff for them. I mean, that's what it's all about. Like, if one person gets something out of an episode, it's worth it for me to do.
Yeah, definitely. It always feels really good opening up that inbox and hearing from people who listen to the show, who have something to say, something to add, something they didn't like, or just want to, I don't know, have a conversation with you just because they heard the show. We have guys who never listen to podcasts at our department who, since we've started this one, like they'll listen to this, they'll listen to Average Jake, anything we mention, they'll listen, and I'll catch them. We'll be doing truck checks or cooking or something, and you'll hear the voice of Robbie Owens, and then, or maybe I'll be taking a nap, and then somebody will be like, "Oh, they just shouted out you guys on this podcast." Like,
That's awesome. Yeah, we're like, okay, well, I got to check it out now.
Yeah, so it's cool that other guys are, not only are they listening just because they know us, but they're starting to learn and they're starting to get to know these other prominent figures in the fire service who do have the passion to train and teach and pass on knowledge. So I think that's the kind of like the hidden benefit. At first you listen because you know the guy, but then you start branching off. You go, you know, go in this direction a little bit, this direction a little bit. Oh, didn't like that, so I'll come over here. Wow, really like that. And next thing you know, you got a bunch of guys talking, having full-blown conversations about fire service topics that just weren't happening before.
And man,
yeah, I mean,
and some craziness. Ahead, some is whenever they start messaging your department about joining your department. Yeah, they heard a podcast and they send a message to your chiefs like, "Hey, you know, I heard about your department from the Do Work podcast from Cody and Steven, and I live in Canada." And I mean, like, it was crazy, but shout out to Colin. I'm going to screw your name up, bro, but shout out to Colin D and Timo for sending the shout out to the Chiefs. Like,
he's going to miss that shout out, 'cause he's that name's going to gloss over. You butchered it so bad.
What was it? Say it better. Say it better than motherfucker.
Okay. I'll shut up.
But yeah, man, like it's crazy how this podcast can, where it takes you. I mean, the people that you meet, and I mean, we're talking. I listened to your podcast, and then we decided to start one from how you were talking on one of the couple first episodes.
Yeah.
About starting your podcast, and we're like, hell, we got a different perspective that we can throw out there too. Let's give it a shot. Let's try it.
There's been something about me and Cody where we had the potential to be best friends, but he has a family and kids and I'm single. So like, we'd never really hang out. He goes to bed by 7:30. I'm up till midnight. You know, he wears his dad shoes, all white Nikes.
What's wrong with the Monarchs, bro? Like the Monarchs with the green ring around them.
So we tried all sorts of things. We tried to start a band, which failed. And then found out that we both like the Average Jake Firefighter podcast. And then, you know,
we decided, let's do it.
Now here we are sitting less than a year later talking to Robbie Owens. It's cool. It's
I wouldn't give up on the band, man. That could be wicked.
Oh yeah, just straight wicked.
No, see, Cody likes butt rock and I like metal, so
whatever. Okay, so if it's mainstream, Steven doesn't like it. So it's gotta be like underground goat raping.
Yeah.
And then it's great music.
Yeah, then it's, you know, virtuoso. That's really cool, though. We're both in the podcast worlds. It's still kind of a niche market, wouldn't you say, for the fire service?
Yeah. Like I said, it's starting to get a little more crowded because a lot of people are starting to, I mean, like, you've got the Pin the Q, the Thin Red Line, Jump Seat Radio, Chief Lamb, you guys, me, Brothers in Battle. Like I said earlier, the thing that's awesome about them is that they're all different. I mean, like, you know, your guys' style doesn't sound anything like mine, and that's great because I need that perspective too, right? Like, maybe I've got my head up my ass and I need to listen to Chief Lamb for him to tell me that, no, man, you've got your head up your ass. Like, you need to think about it from this perspective. Like, I think that there's so much value. Like, there's so much more in the fire service than just those big name firefighters and you know, those famous, you can't see the air quotes because this is the freaking podcast, but you know, I mean, those famous firefighters that are out there. It's just so much more than that, right? There, you know, Henrico Fire is not a world famous fire department, but it is to me. So I want people to know what we're doing here in Central Virginia, and I want people to know that we're on the cutting edge too, man. Like, just because, you know, I'm not working in the Bronx somewhere, like, what I have to say has got value as well, and it may actually reach more people in the fire service than some of those other guys. And again, not knocking them. I mean, look, I'm as much of a fanboy as the next guy, right? I go to FDIC. I do all of these things, man. I read Fire Engineering. I geek out over Dennis Laguerre. I geek out over all this stuff, right? But at the end of the day, like you said, I got to make sure that stuff's vetted to fit my world. You know, that's just what it is.
You recently released an episode that was kind of a bombshell. It's not your most recent one, but I thought it hit pretty hard, and I kind of wanted to talk about it. Risk is our business.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's talk about that.
I mean, what transpired to make you come out with this? Because this was kind of a gut punch to a lot of people, and I noticed that this conversation has been started, and people have pitched in with their input on Facebook, social media. What started this? How did you end up with this episode?
It's just this whole conversation and talk about the fire service has started to become a little bit risk averse, right? And I'm not a cowboy or anything like that. You know, I believe in wearing my gear and all that stuff, right? But this whole clean cab and all this stuff, it's gotten away. And even I'm guilty, right? Like, I'm guilty as anybody else. Like, I kind of bought into some of that stuff for a while. It just kind of hit me, like, listening to all this conversation about how, you know, and I mean, and I was like you guys probably, I got trained to be told that I was number one, right? That my safety was number one and that I was the most important person, you know, on the fire ground and all this kind of stuff. And I just, we were, again, guilty. I was putting the victim second. I was putting the citizen second. And I didn't want to be that way anymore.
I don't know if it's like for you as it was for me, that was kind of beaten to your head at the Fire Academy.
100%.
That's how it was to me. At the Fire Academy, they beat that shit into every single one of our heads as you're number one. Your safety's number one.
Yeah.
They never talked about the victim. They talked about you.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, like one of the instructors, and again, I like this guy. He was a great fire instructor, but his mantra was, I'm number one, sucks to be you. And I'm like, whoa, you know what I mean? Like, what in the world? You know, that's crazy. But, you know, again, as a 16, 17-year-old kid, you tend to buy that message, right?
Oh, I did.
I did.
Absolutely. So I bought that. I kind of bought into that a little bit. And I started to take those steps of, hey, man, you know, you're number one, I'm number one, right? So I do things that are number one guy things. You know, so I make those mistakes, I guess. And I just got kind of tired of being that way and doing those things. And so it just, I thought of that and I was watching Star Trek. I know I'm a nerd, right? But I was watching Star Trek and Kirk had that great speech. And that's kind of how it came about.
Star Trek speech done kicked off Robbie. Like, that's the way to go, bro.
The end result was one of the most enjoyable episodes of any podcast that I've listened to. And looking back at the whole clean cab thing, I approach everything with an open mind. I want to know everything about it. You know, I've said it before. I'm the type of guy who will research for 30 minutes what we should eat before. You know, other guys will just pick a restaurant. I research. I read reviews. I do everything. We can't go anywhere till I'm 100% certain we've made the right choice.
It's annoying as a motherfucker.
And with clean cabs, I mean, it was real easy to just tick that off of the list of things we should be doing because with our department so small, if we were to have one structure fire, you've just taken the entire fire department out of commission because all of our engines respond to that structure fire, except for the callback engine. But then they got to wait how long to wash six to eight guys' turnout gears with one extractor? It's just, not possible.
We have one extractor and one set of bunker gear per member.
Yes.
We don't have two sets of gear to switch out and change.
Nor do we have the budget for it. So while our administration would like to get us two sets of gear, it's just not feasible, and we don't know when it will be. So as far as the whole clean cab concept, we first got introduced to that in Frisco this year at a conference, and we already had our doubts, just because for our department, it's not going to work at all. I could see for large departments where they have multiple responding units to every scene, and you can get the third territory guy to come in, some guy come in and that's his third territory and he's covering for y'all while y'all are getting y'all's gear washed. I mean, that makes sense. Sure. Why not do it? I don't know. Yeah. As far as the whole keeping your...
We got six guys, bro.
As far as keeping your gear and your pack and all that stuff and putting that on scene, I don't know about you, Robbie, but I've received a lot of, very passionate responses from guys who are on the clean cab side of the argument. So this is how it'll go. I'll be like, don't put your gear on and your pack on scene when seconds count and so on, like Chief Reinhold says. They'll say, we have clean stuff in the cab. We don't show up in our station uniform. All we need to do is put our pack on. That's fine. This is what I think, though. The situation where, I don't know if you've ever ran two or maybe three structure fires pretty much back-to-back in a single shift, but I have. And
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we've had, especially when I was at Station 6, which is one of our busiest stations assigned to a ladder truck, we had three fires in one shift. And I am lucky enough to where the department that I work for, I've got two sets of gear, multiple hoods, multiple access to extra hoods, multiple sets of gloves. You know, I mean, I can almost, if we run a fire, I can get almost a completely brand new set of gear. I won't be touching anything dirty, right? But, you know, the clean cab guys, do they have some points? Sure. But that's not the service that I want coming to my family, I can assure you. And I would argue that I have been on fires. And again, the whole reason, right, why I come off with my mask on, when I was a fireman riding backwards, I came off with my mask on. The reason that was is because I've been in situations where those few seconds, and it is just a few seconds, but they mattered. Had I not come off with my mask on, the situation could have gone adversely. I get what they're saying, but I just don't think in the business that we do, like Chief Reinwald says, man, when seconds counts, we count seconds. And this is a seconds counts job. I can't get behind something that's going to cost citizens' lives, right? And you're talking to a guy, too, by the way, who is the husband of a cancer survivor, right? My wife, when she was pregnant with our second son, got diagnosed with thyroid cancer. She was a volunteer firefighter as well. I can't prove it, but I guarantee she got cancer from her hood. Guarantee. Guarantee that's what it had. That's what caused it. Because there was no reason for a 28-year-old lady at the time to have cancer, right? No, you know, no cancer history in her family, nothing like that. There was just literally no other reason except for the exposure to carcinogens from firefighting to have cancer. So I get it, man. Cancer sucks. You don't want to be on that side of the doctor's appointment when they tell your wife you've got cancer and you may, and this may affect your child, your unborn child. You don't want to be in that doctor's appointment. And so I've been there, heard those conversations, and I still say, we don't need to take our gear out of the cab, right? Even having gone through all that stuff in my life, we don't need to take our gear out the cab because it could cost somebody their life. You need to have your air pack in the cab. You need to come off the cab ready to work. And ready to work means being able to save that person's life at a second's notice. And I just can't get behind anything that's going to provide less than that. Like, I'm a guy who runs on the fire ground, dude. Like, that is not, you know, people, like, look at you like you're crazy. But I run on the fire ground. You know, I move at a fast pace because we need to move at a fast pace.
That was another one of those bullshit things they told you at the fire academy. Mm-hmm. Don't run on the fire ground. I always thought, how in the hell are you going to tell me not to run on a fire ground when somebody's burning inside of a building? I'll get to you in a minute, but I got to walk. So, hold on. You'll be fine. I can't run.
The term that they always told us when I got hired with Enrico was use a professional gait. I was like, I don't even know what that means, but I'll try.
Yeah, I think for us at our academy, it was a move with purpose. So whether that's running or walking or whatever, move with a purpose.
They never told us that shit. They told me, don't run, just move quickly.
No, they told us that too. We couldn't run. We just had to move with a purpose. But what the public expects of a firefighter, and what does the public know about firefighters? Not as much as we do. Like, they have a very...
We're here to make their day better. We're going to save them.
Otherwise, they don't think about us. No. Unless they see us out filling the boot or whatever. So that is the reason why you have so many guys bought into the fire service. That is the reason why you have so many guys spending their own money to go to conferences to get better. That is why you have so many guys doing trainings with their crew who typically didn't train so they could get better. That is why you have guys throwing ladders, even though we all know how to throw ladders. Well, turns out you don't know how to throw them all as well as you thought, right? This is why we show up on scene ready to work, because that's what they expect of us. I thought your episode 20, Risk is Our Business, for all of our listeners, if you haven't heard Average Jake Firefighter Podcast, start off with that one. You got two more to catch up to as far as new episodes, and then a whole backlog beyond that. So
yeah, and who can say it better than Captain Kirk, right? I mean, that guy was the risk taker. He's not like all reserved like Picard, right? I mean, Steven, you know what I'm talking about here. Yep. Cody, you may not know what's going on.
Yeah, I was a Star Wars guy. I'm Star Wars all the way.
I like Star Wars too. Han Solo is perfect, prime example too. He's a risk taker. You know, nothing wrong with being a nerd. But seriously, when I say that the risk is our business stuff, like I said before, I'm not a cowboy, man. Like, I get to work, you know, our shift, we do shift change at 7. I get to work, and I check out my, I get to work an hour early so that I can take the time to set my table right in my fire truck, right? Like, I'm checking my air pack to make sure it's full of air. I'm checking my mask. I'm breathing air through my mask to make sure that it works, to make sure all the functionality. We've started using Bluetooth with our radios, so, like, our air packs have Bluetooth that's connected to our radio. And so I need to make sure that works every day, right? Because technology is a very fickle thing. I'm making sure my gear is laid out the way, my flashlight works, all that stuff. When we get a call, I'm wearing all my PPE. I'm wearing all that stuff. I'm breathing air during overhaul. I'm doing all of those things. But I still have to, at the end of the day, once I take that risk down to as low as I can get it, and that starts at the second you walk in the door, checking all your gear, making sure you're trained, and making sure you're PTing. I've managed that risk as low as I can get it. If you're coming into this expecting there to be no risk, then you should quit, because this is a risky job. It's what we do. We do the very best we can to take it down to the most manageable level that we can, and then we do it. We take that risk, whatever that risk may be. Today, that risk may be that I've got to go into that window to see if someone's in there. Tomorrow, that risk may be, hey, man, I've got my, you know, gown on or whatever, but I still got to do CPR on this cancer patient, right? Even though they may have some sort of communicable disease. I signed up to take that risk too, but I protect myself the best way that I can, and then I do it. And then I let the chips fall where they may, right? I mean, that's just how it is. We don't operate in a vacuum. We can't make this a risk-free job. We cannot be risk-averse. So we just have to manage it the best way we can, and then we do it. There's never going to be I've never been to a completely safe fire. There's always been a risk. I've never been to a completely safe EMS call. There's always something. There's a dog that could bite you in the ass or something. I mean, like, there's never
needle sticks. I mean, there's so much crap that can. Our job is not safe.
Yeah, it's not.
We make it safer, but it's not inherently safe.
We're not filing paperwork in a cubicle.
No, and even then you could get a damn paper cut. I mean, it's just endless risk here. You know?
Like, if you don't want to risk it, then stay at the station or go home.
Yeah.
Because responding to a call, you're putting yourself at risk.
This Maltese cross right here looks really cool, though, and it helps me with
I like the T-shirt, okay? I really do.
I mean,
like what it stands for, but I don't really like what it stands for.
Like, when it comes down to it, to dig into it, yeah, I think there's this whole tribe mentality. People like belonging to a group. They like belonging to a community. The fire service has one of the most infectious communities out there. Like, it's just great. Everybody who comes in loves it. Now, whether you love the work or not, that's up to you to decide.
Yeah, and you know, it's kind of funny, and my good buddy John Dixon says this. There was not a draft instituted for your service in the fire department, right? Like, I don't know about you guys. No one came to my house and said, hey, man, we want you to be a firefighter, and you got to do it.
You like, have to. Like, here's your paperwork. Yeah. Yeah, that didn't happen.
That's not how it happened. I worked my tail off studying, going to the gym for preparing for physical agility tests, going through multiple interviews, went through two departments before I got to the one that I wanted to be at, went through recruit school, all this stuff. And so I'm going to come here and, you know, I worked really hard to get where I'm at, and it doesn't make any sense to me for people to do all that work and then come to the, and then hate it. Right.
Do you remember when Henrico called you? You remember the day they called you and you looked on your phone and you're like, holy shit, here it is. It's either good or bad. Yep. And you answered it and you talked to them and they told you, you got it. Be here at this time. You're pumped up. You probably hung up and just lost it, right?
Yeah, I was actually on shift working for Stafford, and we were on our way back from the hospital after taking an EMS run, and the phone rang, and I thought I was going to go absolutely crazy. I was like, you know, no offense to Stafford County. I mean, they gave me a shot at being a career firefighter, so I owe them a lot. But when I hung up that phone, I was like, I'm out this bitch.
Deuces.
I was like, I'm out.
Yeah.
It was like, it really was for me. That was my, like, you're going to the show, kid. You know what I mean? It really was.
But that's what I try to remind people is, remember the time when you got that phone call. Like, that department called you. Your department called you, and how excited you were. I lost my mind. You
probably shit your pants.
Absolutely.
I was close. Yeah, because I was, that's past blown up. Like, it's a high percentage chance I shat. but I was so excited when I got that phone call, and people work at departments, and they're just miserable. Like, how the hell does that happen?
Like I said, I was in recruit school with a guy who I had volunteered with and everything. He had been taking the test for Henrico Fire since he was 18 years old. He didn't get hired till he was 30.
Wow.
So, I mean, and I got hired on my second time taking the test, you know, at 22 years old. So, I mean, and that, guess what? That guy doesn't hate his job at all, right? Like, he loves his job. So, like, how could you, when you put it in perspective to that, the effort that that guy put in, how dare I hate the place that I work, right? Like, if I hate it that much, I should just leave and go work somewhere else.
Exactly. And we all fall into lulls. I'm not going to say that, you know, I show up to Pampa Fire every single day, because there has been a few times where I've thought about leaving. And, you know, it's just what it is. We fall into lulls, but...
You have your brothers around you who pull you out of it.
They do.
Yep, every time.
Yeah.
And then it reminds you of why you're not such a punk ass and miserable bastard, and you get to work and you make things better.
Yeah, I mean, and I think if we all, like, at least from my, I think a lot of us lack, especially in my fire department, a lot of us lack perspective. And what I mean by that is, you know, so I'm pretty active in the fire service. Like, I go to conferences. I've gone, you know, to the National Fire Academy a bunch of times, you know, so I go out there and I've experienced the other parts of the fire service. And my fire department is not perfect, but we got it pretty damn good. We've got some of the best front-of-the-line apparatus in the country. Every front-line engine is a Pierce Quantum. Every apparatus is a Pierce Dash or Pierce ladder truck is a Pierce Dash or Pierce Lance. All of our ambulances are, like, brand spanking new. We're building fire stations. We're just getting ready. We just built a fire station. We're getting ready to build another two. We're adding people left and right. We've gotten pay raises every year. I make more money in the fire department than I ever thought I would ever make in my life. I never got into the fire department thinking that I was going to be rich. And I make more money than I ever thought I would ever make. If, at the end of the day, what do you really want from the fire department, right? Like, they're meeting their obligation to me. They don't owe me my happiness. They owe me a paycheck for the work that I do, not going there and sitting on my ass. They owe me a paycheck for the work that I do. They owe me a safe place to work, which means, like, good gear, good apparatus, and a roof over my head that doesn't kill me. That's pretty much it. They don't owe me my happiness. In fact, I owe them, because I'm the one who took the oath to serve. I'm the one who took the oath to serve. I'm the one who came and said, I want to work here, and I'm willing to put myself at risk for the citizens of Henrico County. At the end of the day, what are you looking for? You know, don't lose your sense of service. This is a service job. It's not a selfless job.
Exactly. We have to live up to that Maltese that we wear on our chest. We have to live up to that for all the guys who've done the job, for all the guys who haven't come home. It's much bigger than you or I, and it'll be here long after we're gone. So if you want to get rich, like my dad says, start your own business. He hated that I went into the fire service, and he supported me 100% of the way, but he said, you're going to be taking orders from somebody the rest of your career. But if that's, if that's not you, and you don't like being told what to do, or being made to go out and train, or being made to meet and maybe exceed the expectations of the public that you serve, go start a business. Run it how you want. Do what you want.
You know, we see so much of that. And I'll be quite honest with you. I think it's, people talk about entitlement or whatever, this new generation. I personally think a lot of it's our own fault, because a lot of us, especially what I'm seeing in my fire department, we came prepackaged. Out of my recruit school, there was only two or three people that had no experience in the fire service. So we came prepackaged, right? So no one had to explain to me the values of the fire service. Like, I already knew them. I'd been living them since I was a kid. I didn't need that talk. But these other guys and gals who are great people, but they don't necessarily understand exactly what we're doing. And we have failed them by not sitting them down and be like, hey, look, this is the values of the fire service. Yeah, it's all cool to run up and down the road on the wee-woo, but we're here to serve other people. If you don't like being second every day, like when you come into the fire department, it has nothing to do with you. It has everything to do with everyone else out there. We're doing things for the citizens. We're doing things for the person beside you. And in fact, I train as much as I do in PT like I do for me, of course, but it's for my kids, for my wife, for the other guys' kids and wives and families and fathers and mothers who are around me. So, I mean, it's not about you. Listen, this job has nothing to do with you. It has everything to do with them. We have to sit those people down and tell them, like, hey, this is what this job is really all about. This is the values that you have to have, and this is how we operate here. If you're coming here for you, that's not going to work out very well.
I don't think I could have said it any better myself.
I think we're going to wrap this up, but I want to end on one last little segment here. And I want to talk about one of your podcasts that kind of, I mean, at the exact right time is when I heard it, is the best Christmas gift that you could give. That was such a good podcast, man.
Well, thank you.
It seemed like you went off, and I loved it. Yeah. I was like, that's me. Some days you just got to go off.
You know, and that actually came at like and I've talked about this on my podcast before as well, and again, like you said, we've all go through lulls, right? And I had a lull in my fire department. I was kind of a rising star, and I messed up. And I got the proverbial punishment. And I was just feeling kind of down.
Hey, I did that too. I got my pee-pee slapped not too long ago.
By all the chiefs.
Yeah, I called all the chiefs out, and that didn't work out too well. Like, we all sat down together, and I called him out on a bunch of stuff.
I thought Cody was going to lose his job that day.
Yeah, it was fun, you know?
It never works.
Yeah, some days you just got to do it.
But you're exactly right, man. Like, yeah, you're right. Some days you do have to do it. But so what kind of inspired me to that was that is the best thing that you can do, and not just necessarily Christmas. Like, just show up. And again, I preach this 3 hours, right? And I was actually having this conversation the other day. I don't really feel like anything that we do or anything that I've ever asked anybody to do is hard, right? We're a brotherhood, a familyhood is what we like to say in Henrico Fire. Like, this is a little bit deeper than a brotherhood. It's a familyhood. Like, we're a family. When you show up, we'll help you, right? And no one's asking you to be Rich Froning, a super CrossFit athlete, right? No one's asking you to even be the best firefighter in the whole fire department when you show up today, right? Like, no one's asking you that.
Let me see if I got this right for your department. Sorry to interrupt you there, buddy, but
no, go ahead.
For my fire department, tell me if it's close to yours. I show up at 7 a.m., okay? So number one thing I got to do is check an engine. I got to check my truck. And I'm like, oh my God, it's so much work. Like, I'm swinging a hammer all day long. So I go and check my engine. Once my engine's checked, all my stuff's, like, cleanup's done, right? You do your station cleanup, you check your truck. And what is it now? It's time to eat. Wow, okay. So now I go and get something to eat. After that, we come back, we figure out what we're going to train on for the day. Figure out what we're going to study. And then it's lunchtime. And you're like, wow, I get to eat again. Then we got to figure out after training and after we do physical fitness, we do a little bit of training, a little bit of PT. That's it. The next task is to clean apparatus for the day. There is nothing hard. But, I mean, running calls, yeah, but you're not swinging a hammer all day long.
Yeah, no, I mean, you're not. No, and that's pretty much the standard routine in my fire department, right? Like, you get to work. I show up to work an hour early again so I can make sure that I'm ready to do what I am, you know, supposed to be doing. But yeah, it's, you know, check the trucks, get a little breakfast, train, go to the grocery store, eat lunch, PT, watch fire truck, you know, like clean up around the house. It's pretty standard stuff. Like you said, it's far, far, far easier than working in that roofing warehouse I worked in when I was in college. I can assure you.
I mean, you're not tripping pipe all day long. You're not dying out working somewhere, working yourself to death. Besides structure fires and difficult calls, you've got it pretty much made, but some people's attitude towards it is insane.
Yeah, and that's for various reasons, right? But like I said, nothing that you're being asked to do is pretty hard, and we'll help you, right? Like, if you need
help,
the only thing you have to do by yourself is show up on time. We'll help you with everything else.
Yep.
So, I mean, like, that's it. That's the only task you have to accomplish all day alone is showing up, like, getting there. I've never asked anybody to be a CrossFit superstar. I've never asked anybody to love the fire department the way that I love it. And I'll be quite honest with you, I probably have an unhealthy obsession with it. The other, you know,
I'm with you.
I'm sure you guys probably do as well. I've got a trunk scanner in my house that when they punch out a fire in my fire department, I'm turning the scanner on. Sometimes I listen to it all day. So, I mean, like, even though, like, I'm not there, but I'm listening to all the calls. I'm listening to the hundreds of EMS calls because it just, I want to know what everyone's doing, right? Like, I'm just into it, right? I'm reading, you know, watching fire. I watched Bobby Halton's FDIC speech today, right? So, like, I'm into it. I'm never asking anybody to do those things, right? You know, in fact, I would almost argue against being as involved in the fire service as I am. She's a fickle mistress. She won't love you back.
I went to the gym this morning. I come home from 10 to 3 today. I read chapter 5 of Hazmat, A Fish to Hazmat.
Yeah, and, absolutely.
Mean, that's just what I do.
Yeah, so it's just, you know, like I said, I'm not asking anybody to do any of those things. I'm just asking that when you're here, you be here. You give a shit, right?
That's right.
You give a shit. Like, you come to work and you care for the 24 hours that you're here. When you go home, I don't care if you don't think about the fire department at all. Me, I'm thinking about it. Like, I just can't help it.
I'm waiting for my phone to ring. Like, come on. Tell me we got a grass fire today.
I'm sitting in bed with my wife the other night, and the box alarm comes out for a fire, and I'm like, I'm pulling up the CAD like, ooh, this could be a fire. This could be a fire. Oh, yeah, it's a working fire. You know what I mean? Like, I got to go downstairs and listen to this. She's like, it's 10:45 at night. Yeah, I know. But I got to know if the, you know, I get that. But, you know, or I'm pulling up Broadcastify because, you know, there's a guy streaming or whatever. Just I get that. But just show up and care for the 24 hours that you're here, man. It's not that hard. Be into it for the 24 hours that you're here. As a matter of fact, it's not even being into it for the 24 hours that we're here. Because like we said at the beginning, you're going to sleep. Right?
You're going to have personal time.
Right. I'm not going to come in there and wake you up at 4 a.m. and go, let's go pull the bumper line.
We're advancing hose right now.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's insane, right? But, you know, so really it's like from that shift change moment, that 0700 for us, that 0700, be engaged until, you know, usually we will train. Usually we'll work. Our work day is usually till like 4:30, 5:00. After that, it's usually your time. Sometimes we have nighttime training schedule, but it's rare. It's very rare. So usually after 4:30, we ain't doing a whole lot other than run calls. So just be engaged. That's not that much time. Christ, there's people who work way more hours than that, doing way harder jobs. Like you said, swinging hammers and hanging rafters and shit. That's real work. We are extremely lucky to be professional firefighters, like, and make money doing this job. Because there's people that would beg. I mean, we have 700 to 1,000 people apply to our department every time. Trust me, one of them dudes would come take your job in a second.
And just remember how you felt when you got the phone call. That guy is out there. He wants that phone call.
Yep, he wants it. You're exactly right. And so, like, so just show up and care, man. Show up and give a shit. And that's the best thing that you can do for everybody around you. Like, you don't – none of us are perfect, man. I make mistakes every day. I make mistakes every day. I told a guy the wrong turn on a call the other day. It shit happens.
Oh, yeah.
Okay?
I've done it.
Breach it.
Yeah, this shit happens, man.
Or my captain's like, he's like that way. And I'm like, well, we're going this way first, I guess.
Yeah, looks like we're going around the block.
Done that. We've all done it.
Yeah, I was just trying to give you the three-sided approach is what I always say.
I want you to get the whole 360 right now.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, like I said, no one's asking anybody to be perfect. No one's asking anybody anything other than to come and care for the 24 hours that you're there. And if you can't do that, then what are you doing? Why are you here? You know, we can, I mean, and it's okay, right? Not everyone's meant to do this show. We got to get out of that crap too. That is something that we have definitely, I think, gone down the rabbit hole too much of telling everybody, oh, you could be a firefighter. All you got to do is have these good values and we can train you to do the rest. I don't 100% buy that. I don't think anybody was made a firefighter, but you do have to be the right type of person to be a firefighter, right?
Like 100%.
There are people we're not going to turn everyone into a firefighter. That's just not how it happens. And look, man, I'm a firefighter. I could not, even as much as I would want to, there's no way I would be a doctor. Like, it's not gonna happen. Okay? Like, I'm not that, I don't have that skill set. And that doesn't mean that that's bad. That just means that I'm different. We got to get out of that business, man. Not everyone can be a firefighter. Not everyone should be a firefighter. But if you do have those skills and you can perform. And that's essentially what this job is all about, right? It's about performance. We'd like everybody to be nice guys and feel the same way that we do about everything. And but at the end of the day, we've kept some pretty, there's people that are in my fire department that are flat out jerks, but they're damn good at their job. And so we want them. That's fine. Like, it's all about performance. And so at the end of the day, that's what we're looking at, man, the end result. And just show up and care. Show up and care for 24 hours, man. It's not that hard. Be a part of the fire service for 24 hours. Then you can go home. Just remember when you do get that discount at that Chick-fil-A for wearing that Maltese cross, why you get it. And you have to give a shit to earn that discount.
Definitely. 100%. Just like Cody said.
100%.
Robbie, I want to thank you so much for agreeing to do this podcast. Cody surprised me with it like a week ago. So I heard you guys talk nice. Pretty frequently. So yeah, I was stoked. And
yeah, I kind of flaunt that at Steven. I'm like, yo, what's up? It's not a big deal or anything, but I'm kind of text buddies with Robbie. So like, so just, you know, suck on that.
Well, Steven, you can text me too, bro. It's no worries.
Don't tell him that. I don't need him on my level.
Yeah, but no, we appreciate you coming on the show so much, and it's been awesome. Great chat, and you're welcome back anytime. Before we go, I want you to list off all the places our listeners can find you, and if there's any conferences or any events that you're going to or going to be a part of in the near future.
Yeah, all right. Again, like I said, guys, thank you very much for the opportunity. Obviously, I'm on Twitter at AverageJakeFF. I'm on Instagram under the same name at AverageJakeFF. I've got the blog and the podcast, Average Jake Firefighter blog, Average Jake Firefighter podcast. The podcast is, I do it through the Anchor app, so it publishes on just about any kind of podcast listening medium that you can download on your phone and various other devices. As far as conferences go, I put in to teach at Firehouse Expos, so hoping to hear something back from them. I'm actually on the staff for the Fireground Commander Conference, and I'm on the staff for the Virginia Company Officer Summit, and I'll be at both of those coming up, Company Officer Summit at the end of this year, and Fireground Commander are going to be back next March in Henrico, so that's going to be better. We're already starting to book speakers for that. Already in the works to do some other stuff. Want to go to Water on the Fire real, real bad in Pensacola, Florida, and also want to go to HROC. Don't know if I'm going to be able to make that happen this year, but probably definitely next year. Hopefully to be back at FDIC next year. And I just recently heard I got accepted to the Virginia Chief Officer Academy. So I'll be there at the University of Richmond coming up in June. So got a lot going on, hoping to add some more stuff. And I know you guys are the same way, at least Cody, when you have, I got two active kids, they're awesome. They play travel baseball and they travel wrestle. So, you know, trying to fit going to fire conferences in. And, you know, going to watch and being a dad, which is the most important job that I do every day.
I just got kudos, you know, bro. Like just now, text message come in and said, oh, you're the best dad ever.
I helped my
son. He did, had a science project, right? So we decided we were going to try to see how many balloons it took to float Batman.
Oh,
and,
that's awesome.
Oh, yeah. So I got a bunch of helium balloons and we tied them all together and we put them on Batman and it took 21 of them sons of bitches to make this little toy fly. But then I helped my son and we wrote it all up and it, you know, Batman was doing a recon mission over Gotham and it's those kind of things. That's what matters, you know?
Yeah, and you're exactly right.
Steven's going to get
there. You're exactly right.
No, I'm never going to get there. Oh, no, I got two cat children. I don't know where y'all find firefighter spouses, but they're a special breed.
They are.
Oh, they are. Dude, like I said, my wife is tremendous. You know, like I would be able to do nothing without her. I can tell you that. I definitely married up when I married her.
I mean, I get told all the time by my father-in-law, like I married out of my class. So
yeah, I outkicked my coverage. Because,
yep, I'm like, okay no with doubt. That. Like, I'll take it.
Me too. Yeah. So, but that's where I'm going to be, hopefully. Got a lot of stuff in the works. I'm not shy. Just come talk to me if you see me out. And again, thank you guys for having me on. It's been great. Hopefully we'll be able to come back on and hopefully we can get you guys on an episode of my podcast and I can repay the favor.
Oh, hell yeah, bro. We definitely will.
That sounds good. So if you see Robbie Owens anywhere in the future, go ahead and buy him a beer.
Oh, yeah.
Put it on our tab.
Put it on our tab. Yep, and we'll get to you sometime.
I like Keystone Coors Light. All
hey,
that stuff.
There we go. Yeah,
I like it.
I'm drinking a little expensive tonight, bro. Like I've got Coronas. That's my summer beer.
Oh, yeah. I'm a Landshark guy.
So this podcast has been brought to you by Corona.
Yeah, I'm a Landshark guy as well. Screw Corona.
Yeah, I'm a Landshark guy when the summertime. But hey,
Saturday when we record again, Steven, there better be some fucking Landshark here.
Cody buys all the beer for
all
this
of
house.
It. All of it. There's none here unless it's 90-year-old skunk beer.
I drink liquor, so I have whiskey and tequila.
Yeah. Like I said, my favorite beer is free. So
that's my favorite.
I'll drink it.
Awesome. Well, thank you again so much, and you have a wonderful day.
One more thing before you go, Robbie. A little nugget for the listeners. If there was one thing that a firefighter should know, we try to end our podcast with these, is if there's one thing that you would tell a new firefighter coming out, what would it be?
Man, that's kind of a tough one because I feel like there's so much. But I guess if I had to go with the one thing, it would be don't lose your sense of service, because this is a service-based job. Don't ever lose the fact that we are here to serve other people. It's why we exist. And if we don't get that part right, nothing else matters. So don't lose your sense of service. Come to work every day and put that forward in everything that you do, is that we're here to serve others. And if you do that, it kind of puts things in perspective. At least it does for me.
Just try to live your career with remembering when you got the phone call. I try to tell myself that all the time.
Yeah.
Just remember how I felt when I got that phone call.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right, buddy. Well, it's been a great pleasure. I enjoy having you on the show, me and Steven both. And anytime, man, just hit us up. We'd love to be on The Average Jay.
Thanks, guys.
And, I mean, you're pretty much the whole reason we kicked this thing off, for me anyway.
I appreciate that, guys. But you guys are doing all the hard work. I'm just a guy.
Hey, that's us, man. Just two jackasses recording in the panhandle of Texas. So
yeah,
here we are, bro. But definitely, if we're ever up in your area, which we hope to be.
Yeah, absolutely.
We'll definitely catch a beer, man.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I said, hopefully you guys, like I said, I want to come to FDIC next year, or hopefully we can meet up and do this thing in person. That'd be great.
Well, let's meet up at FDIC next year.
That'd be great.
Yeah, all right, bro.
Absolutely.
Well, we appreciate it.
Thank you, guys.
All right. See you, Robbie. Well, that was the interview with Robbie.
Kick-ass interview, man. I'm glad we got him on the show. It took a while, but we finally got our schedules to link up, and then we could get him on the show. He's a busy man, as you can tell. He's got a family and had to do the interview in his car at his kid's practice. But you know what? We made time. It worked.
Sorry, Robbie. I mean, between then and now, I believe your team, the Washington Capitals,
they didn't quite
they didn't,
make it.
They didn't go very as far as we thought they were going
to
go.
Go to my damn Penguins, sons of bitches.
Yeah.
I'm still sour about that fucking Islanders.
Yep. I was really hoping for a Caps-Islanders matchup. I think that would have been awesome. But unfortunately, that's just not how it happened. And I know the refs might have had some things to do with certain, but that was like the story of the playoffs, it seemed like. I mean, what happened with San Jose, what happened with the Caps and the Canes. What happened, heck, in the finals with the Blues and the Bruins? But you know what?
Didn't happen in the Penguins. They just got their ass kicked.
Yeah, they just didn't perform. Like, yeah, Crosby, Malkin, they didn't do what they were supposed to do. Anyways, I read something that said, or maybe it was another podcast that I listened to, I'm not sure. They were like, the problem with the NHL isn't the refs, it's the whining. Robbie, if you want to call back and we can talk more about this topic, I mean, I understand. So hey, but you know what? There's always next year. And I just want to say I was in D.C. when the Caps won the series last year, when they won it all. And it was really cool. We were at a bar, and everybody was inside watching hockey. Every bar we went to. And then once the bars closed and the game was over, people like flooded the streets. It was pretty neat. It was a different experience. As, you know, I've been to D.C. several times, but it's always cool getting to be a part of a city, you know, winning the biggest sporting event, you know, being there in real time, seeing people get really drunk and like shout and stuff. Kind of like, you know, when Texas Tech made it to the Final Four and then they went to the, I don't know, that should be called the Final Two, right? Like the championship. The championship game. And, you know, they lost, but we had that huge riot.
Like they burnt like those Rent-A-Scooters down.
Yeah. I think they burnt like one or two or three of them. I don't know. It was massive. It was like a big thing.
Oh, yeah, it was crazy.
People were like, oh, my gosh, Texas Tech, we're better than that. We're better people than this.
They just really didn't know how to, like, do the whole celebratory riot.
No.
Because it's never happened.
It's never happened.
So they were like, let's burn this.
Yeah. And you see the aftermath, the photos that the news agencies posted. It's like, wow.
They zoomed in on these little scooters that made it look like the whole city was burned down.
Yeah. And like somebody probably could have just like swept it off with a broom.
Oh, yeah.
And you would have never known the difference.
What they were trying to do is they were pouring tequila on the wheels, trying to make flaming wheels and ride them.
Uh-huh.
And it eventually caught one scooter on fire, and they were like, burn it down. So then they started making a little bonfire with a few of them.
And I almost believe the tequila thing, except it's Lubbock and it's Texas Tech, so it's probably Everclear because they're classy like that.
Yeah, classy. It could have been.
But yeah, that we heard that straight from the mouths of Lubbock firemen who responded, or who knew people who responded. We got one Lubbock firefighter. He was on the show, episode 2, Mr. Aiden Mooney, and he's over there getting his paramedic on right now. So, but yeah, hope you guys enjoyed the interview. Hope you guys enjoyed the episode. Thank you so much for listening. As always, we'd love to
Hear from you. Hit us up. Hit on our social media. Social media. Twitter, Facebook, whatever.
Uh-huh.
Hit us up.
And I love Instagram, but we're just not on Instagram. We don't take that many pictures, so I can't justify us being either. We're not like some social media profiles. They like post content every day, sometimes 2 or 3 times a day. Fuck, man.
That's a lot of work.
That is a lot of work. And I know it's just on your phone, but shit, I can't.
I can't even remember to check my fucking email, let alone to take pictures and... I try to whenever we're out training or whatever, but
yeah.
Other than that, not really.
Yeah, just, and we don't
pictures.
We don't do.
God
like,
damn it, you little fucker!
So this demon cat just scratched the shit out of him.
Yep, he keeps fucking with me.
Maybe I'll start posting pictures of my cats and maybe create an Instagram profile maybe for do work with just
kill
cat
the
photos.
Fucking mic.
I take enough Get cat photos you. That I could probably make that happen.
Satan ass motherfucker.
Also, want to give a shout-out to our buddy J.R. Costa from over in Florida. I found out he won a free trip to the Oath Keepers Conference.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, Kyle read off his name.
Get off, dickhead.
On Facebook Live, they did the whole random.org thing, and it's everything included. Rental car, airfare, hotel, lodging, and the conference itself. So, that's awesome. Congrats, J.R. You're going to have to hit us up. Let us know how Oath Keepers was.
Oh, yeah.
For sure.
We might have to put that one on the list. It definitely is on the list, but it might have to go in front of FDIC. We'll see.
Yeah, and the next episode that we will put out was one that we recorded down in Conroe, Texas. We got a Airbnb with two guys from Florida and our friend Bobby Reichart, and we invited Kyle Romagus over and recorded just like a big Knights of the Round Table style podcast. It's going to be a bitch to edit, but it's got a lot of good content. And we're really excited for that one, too. So stay tuned.
Stay tuned, guys. And remember, hit us up on our social media. If you want to be on the show, hit us up.
Yep. And as always,
know your trade.
Do your job.
Do work. We'll see you guys.
See ya.